chat.
Your own.
We are not Shabbos and Shivat. It's, as far as I know, it's philosophy. We're going to talk about it when we get to Rav Futna.
Because Aaron Lucas and Rav Aaron, he lauds him.
He what? L-A-U-D. He lauds him. No, Rav Aaron, I'm going to talk about it. Rav Aaron considered him a Rebbe Mufak. Absolutely. We're finishing up the Rebbe. What I have to say tomorrow, very interesting. I don't think anyone has called attention to what I'm going to do tomorrow. You'll see. And it's maybe tomorrow or one more half a week. Then I want to go back to Dr. Belkin's election. Something came out now and I got permission to tell the inside story. I'm going to tell what no one has spoken about. Right, Lookstein. So Hacky, Rabbi Haskell gave me permission to tell what I know. You'll see. And then I'm doing Rav Futna. Okay? And then I'm doing the history of the rabbinate in America, which will take a few years. I have a world of material, very fascinating. Again, what was the blackest day in the history of the rabbinate of America? I'll get there, but it's a day, RCA, early 50s, what they did with Nayam Vieda, unbelievable. Pressure, money, Gedole Yisrael, it's a whole story. Okay, we can begin. Today is Sunday afternoon, October 30th, 2016, and we're picking up again after the long interruption for Baruch Hashem, the beautiful Chagim. Tomorrow is Rosh Chodesh, and I wish everyone listening, my Talmidim in front of me and the Talmidim across the globe, in the classic traditional blessing, a guten Winter. Be'evrit omrim chorev bari. But in Yiddish, sagt man a guten Winter. How would you say it in English? A healthy winter. All right.
I heard it.
A gesunter Winter. A guten Winter, a gesunter Winter. That's the blessing. Okay, we have a very fascinating shiur today. And I have to tell you that Friday night I ate at the home of very wonderful Jews with tremendous yichas from England, Germany, Ruth and Moshe Cohn. And sitting next to me was Shlomo Le Kalbach's first cousin. I believe their mothers were sisters. And he asked me, what are you teaching Sunday? And I said, I'm teaching whether one can sing Shleimel's Nigunim. And he looked at me, and he what's the Shiley? He couldn't believe this response to the Shla on Shleimel. So, to come back to our last year, the Mishnah Halachit is very fascinating. He paskened every Shiley he wrote, and here you see, it's a very fascinating issue. Not so simple. Mishnah Halachit Chelik Vav, Siman Kufvav, Kuf Zayin, and then Kuf Chet, the Siman we are talking about. And this yeshiva bacha, again, we gave you the name, Hoffman, Avraham Yitzchak Hoffman, I don't know who he is. Maybe Yair Hoffman is his son, because this tshuva was written 45 years ago. And when we talk about his son, I don't know who it is. Yair Hoffman writes for the Five Towns newspaper, and he's a Talmud Chacham. Who knows? Maybe they're related. Okay. And he asked, if you recall, he asked Reb Menashe Klein very innocently, can you listen to music after the Churban? And questions that we all have been asked many times over. Halacha l'maaseh, Reb Menashe Klein paskins that if you're listening for Yirat Shemayim, for songs, to inculcate a good feeling, call it Hasidish feeling, absolutely. If it helps your nerves, it's like this morning I was lo aleinu in a house of mourning being Menachem Novel, Rabbi Jura Yurovetsky, or YU Mismach, a little older than I am. Those of you who studied in YU and had Rabbi Label Dulitz as a Rebbe, he was Label Dulitz's Chafrita. In the days of the open, of the oral smicha bechina, they went in together. You went two at a time. So it was Label and Joe who went in together. And Joe came in Aliyah a month after I did. He was on the next boat. I was on the June boat. And he was on it, the August boat. A month after us, he came in Aliyah, taught in Be'er Sheva, then Yerushalayim, was in Chinuch all his life. So I met my cousin there, Josh Daniel, the dentist. So I was telling him the story of how Baron Lichtenstein wound up in Chicago, because everyone asked me, who are you rooting for in the World Series? And I'm not a Cleveland fan, I'm not a Chicago fan. If the Yankees aren't in the World Series, I'm impartial. But I said, this year I'm rooting for Chicago in memory of Baron Lichtenstein. Do you know how Baron wound up in Chicago? Who? Let me take off a minute. Who saved Baron's life? Family got out of France, I think it was 41 already, 40, 41. The last minute, they got to Baltimore. Why? What was Baron's mother's maiden name? She was a Schwartz. The most famous Orthodox rabbi in Baltimore was Rabbi Nachum Schwartz. He had contact with all the senators and congressmen, and he got the visa for the Lichtenstein family. They came to Baltimore. And now here are the Lichtensteins in Baltimore in a new country. They're greenhorns, and they are first cousins to such a prominent rabbi. And the rabbi's president, the president of the shul, his daughter is getting married. I know this story from Aaron's mother, so don't think I'm making it up. The president is getting married, and they invite the Lichtensteins. What a covered new people, Talmud Chacham, Reb Aaron's father, Yechiel. And the daughter of the president goes to chuppah to the tune, "Here comes the bride, all dressed in white." And I attributed that to Felix Mendelssohn. And Josh Daniels said I'm wrong, and he told me who wrote it and what Felix Mendelssohn wrote. He's a bucky in the music, and an expert in classical music. And Reb Aaron's mother said, "What? The president's daughter is going to chuppah with a goyish song? Baltimore is no place to raise a Jewish child." And they looked around and they got an offer to teach in Chicago. Chicago had, next to New York, it had the second large Orthodox community. And that's how Reb Aaron wound up in Chicago. And he was a big fan in 45 of the Chicago Cubs as they played their last World Series. And I announced I am a Chicago fan. And as you know, the Chicago Cubs kemat ligin in dred. One more game to go, and it's all over for them, for me. At least the Baron's memory is glorious. Now, so classical music, if it calms the nerves, I told you about the rub, I told you about the 9 days, I told you about Beseda, min ken mater sein. But then, the third question he asked Reb Menashe Klein, that was the loaded question. And he says to Menashe Klein, if you're allowed to listen to records, in those days we had records yet, I hope you all remember what records are, 78 RPM, then there was 45, then there was 33.
They're making a comeback.
Could be. And can you listen to the Nigunmim of the Veikut? I'm quoting from the question that the Baal Minagin, the man who made it up, Yatsa Latabit Ra'ah. And he went out Tarbut Ra'ah. Those are pretty sharp words. And that's what he said about Rav Shlomo LeKalbach. Now, I want to pause and just slight background on Rav Shlomo. We'll come into a detailed analysis of his mind later today, as vis-a-vis the area where he seemingly sinned. But background is very simple. Shlomo LeKalbach came from a very elegant Yekki family. Those of you who recognize the name Kalbach and all that goes with it, he was, we would put it this way, the Kennedy family of German Orthodoxy. His father, Rav Naftali Kalbach, his uncle was the great Rav Yosef Kalbach. Many of the Rabbonim in Germany were related to him. So he had this big yichus. They come to America, refugees running away from Hitler. His father becomes a rabbi on the West Side. His mother was a very dominant personality. And Shlomo was a twin. His brother was Eliyahu Chaim Kalbach, who I knew very well. We rabbinated next to each other. Reb Eliyachayim was certainly a Talmud Chacham, a Yerei Shamayim, a Chabadnik, capable, but Shleimela was the genius in the family. And the mother dotted over him, which you got to be very careful if you're familiar with the Reb Shulamit Meiselman's work, and it comes to the comes public again in a work that just came out that I'll talk about perhaps later today and certainly tomorrow. It's, I hold in front of me the first copy that has reached the State of Israel. It comes front line again. If you're familiar with Shulamit Meiselman's work, the accusation is made that Reb Moshe only had eyes for his eldest son. You've heard this, Yitzchak. The Rav was a genius, and you know, I'll understand that it's very difficult for a parent. I know my children, I know my grandchildren, I know my great-grandchildren, and you're always attracted to the genius among them. Thank God not everyone is a genius, or we wouldn't have a normal world. I have to caution you. You all understand what I'm saying, I trust. Some of you have been through life. You're my age. But if everyone's a genius, you would not have a normal world. But Schleimler was a genius. So here you have a kid of German Orthodox background who winds up in Lakewood, one of the earliest Talmidim of Reb Aaron Cutler. And I can tell you that I don't need Shlomo's mother to tell me he was a genius. When I learned in Lakewood, Shlomo already had broken with Lakewood, as we'll see in a minute. But I can tell you they spoke of him in awe. In other words, their attitude was, Alex, look what we lost. Oy vey, such a good mind winds up wasting his time in Chabad. Quote, end quote. All right. He was attracted to the sixth Rebbe and certainly attracted to the seventh Rebbe. Shleimler becomes a Chabadnik. And so you have here an individual, German extraction, Litvisha learning by Reb Aaron Cutler, one of the, what they call the Arayot Shebechabura, and then he comes a Chassid, a Chabadnik. Okay. As we will see later, Chabad breaks with Shlomo and they break with him. And he wrote this Nigunim and Tabut Ra'ah. Now, what does Tabut Ra'ah mean? All right, Tabut Ra'ah, first of all, he performed before men and women mixed. We'll come back to that again. That's a very interesting topic. We're going to have a book launch here on Tuesday night. I can tell you that there'll be mixed seating. There'll be mixed seating. All right, this is the world in which we live. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it halakhically permissible? I mean, this is a very serious question. We intermingle freely, men and women. Is that a bidyeved? Is it desirable? Is it part of Western life that we can accept, that we can't accept? Look what's... Alex, you can't have separate seating here because the people coming in expect to sit together. That's the way they sit. They'll say it's not davening. Whenever we're in shul and it's not davening, we have a meeting, we have a class, there will be mixed seating. It's not something you can force upon the people. But Shleimler started entertaining boys and girls together. Why did he entertain boys and girls together? Right, let me be very honest. I'm only sitting here at this seat teaching Torah, living Torah, Zeiches, Baruch Hashem, to so many wonderful students and family, because I had a desire to meet girls. Now, what am I saying? I was in yeshiva like everyone else. Then you grow up, you start to develop hormones. So I went to Bnei Akiva. Now, tell me, could you run a Bnei Akiva in the 1950s without boys and girls interacting? In the State of Israel, Bnei Akiva gave birth to Ezra. Ezra, now I think there's another organization, boys and girls, more separate, less separate. These are very delicate questions. There is no doubt in my mind that if Shlomo Kalbach wanted to be Makare, boys and girls, he had to have boys and girls sitting together. That was the atmosphere of the 1950s. I can tell you further, and so I made this comment Friday night, and I defended myself in dignity. I was jumped on. People think they know it all. They've experienced nothing. I said, Chabad is like YU. It's not Haredi. What do you mean it's not Haredi? They have beards, payas, black clothes. Yes, Chabad dresses a certain way, but their attitude towards life is not Haredi. And I saw that in the retreat, how they reach out to everyone. And I'll just mention the Sinai scholars. These are boys and girls from college campuses. There was no separate seating. They're intermingled. That's
an outreach.
That's what Kalbach is all about. We're talking outreach.
I understand. But if you went to a wedding in Crown Heights.
But we're talking with Trump, trying to defend him. You understand? I don't want to criticize him. But to this mere yeshiva boy talking to Reb Menashe Klein, the fact that you play music, boys and girls sitting together, tabut ra'ah. All right, that's one part of the problem. And this is a very serious problem. I understand it very, very well. And I'll give you another example. The Rav formed Maimonides 1937. Everyone knows the story. He began with 5 students. So the Rav was criticized time and again. Maimonides is boys and girls together. I don't know how it is today. Do you know are the classes totally intermingled?
Yeah, I think so.
You think so? Okay. Excuse me?
Not for
Limidi Kodesh,
I think.
Not for Limidi. Check it out. You went to Maimonides.
I went to school.
And Limudei Kodesh?
And for Limudei Kodesh, I'm pretty sure in the high school, it's separate.
I once spoke with a Torah. I got the same impression. Okay. But the Rav, so then there was a story. Let me tell you something. Then I might be the only one alive that remembers it. Hailai was beginning. This was something big. In Far Rockaway, the 5 towns, there are enough Orthodox Jews to start a high school. So they came to the Rav. It was a big machloket, separate or together. So they came to the Rav, and we were hanging outside the door, trying to listen through the door. It was in YU. They met in Rabbi Belkin's conference room, room 102, the conference room on the side. And then the main academic center, as it's called, or at least that's what it was called a few years ago. I don't know, maybe they sold the name again. So when they came out of the conference room, Rabbi Harold Lyman, the people involved, says, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, so their question was to the Rav. Some people say, Rav Soloveitchik, you're our role model. You have mixed classes in Maimonides. So the Rav told them, "Bezeh halashon." I remember I didn't hear what the Rav said, but this I heard them repeat it. "Bezeh halashon." That what are you looking at me for? I had no choice. In my mind, that is either you begin with 5 students, a chveis, 3 girls and 2 boys, or you have no school. And this is my mind, that is, that's the tradition. It's a serious question. I can show you another example. We'll come to this down the line when we talk about Rav Simcha Krauss. Rav Simcha Krauss was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Yitzchak Kotner, one of his closest Talmud. And Rav Simcha Krauss, every shiur that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein gave in this building, Rav Simcha Krauss came to once he retired. He went back to America. Now he's involved with the International Base. Then I have a feeling he went back to America because Rav Aaron Lichtenstein is no longer teaching. You follow? That was the magnet. They were friends from Chaim Berlin. So Yitz is wondering, Rav Simcha Krauss, the Rebbe's talking about a Talmud Mufak of Rav Yitzchak Kotner. How did he move so left? You all know Rav Simcha Krauss involved with the feminists and the Torah issues, the women, Chovevei Torah. How did he move so left? So I'll tell you what Rav Simcha Krauss told me. I don't have to, with these ears, and he's one of the nicest people that I have ever met. I have to tell you, he's a mensch 100%. And I've seen people in life, people become arrogant, self-centered. He's one of the nicest people you will ever meet. So don't take anything I'm saying as criticism, but I'm telling you his life story. So he told me the story. Rav Hutner, the Pachat Yitzchak, Guraye Kolel, everything you want to say about Rav Hutner. Then he winds up being rabbi in St. Louis, and he wants to organize a day school in St. Louis. And he tells Rav Hutner, Rebbe, I have like 15 children. I can't make one for boys and one for girls. There are not enough students and there's no money. I have to make it a co-ed. And Rav Hutner told him, you hurried the al yavar. Okay? And that's when the break began. He went ahead and organized the day school. I don't know if anyone's here from St. Louis. St. Louis today is a near Ve'im B'Yisrael. The day school probably has rivalry to the right, to the left today. But he organized it. He had no choice. That's a very delicate question. All right.
If it's true that the Rebbe had no choice, his daughter would have gone in his derech. And all the years, she never requested or demanded a change.
Okay, so I spoke with Atara about this when the movie came out, when the documentary came out. So everyone held me responsible for the content, and I was pilloried, and dots were thrown at me on certain issues in the movie. First of all, people don't understand Aaron HaKefer. I have gotten very little credit in life for what I have done, because I don't push myself on. That movie, I'm proud to say, is the only thing in life I brought into this world single-handedly. Everyone laughed at me and mocked me. And I had two attempts where I could have succeeded, and each time I was shut down. Once with the Rothschild Foundation, they were all ready to go with me. Then with Marvin Heyer, a Wiesenthal Center, ready to go with me, and people from the family interfered, and I was shut down. Finally, I hit the miracle. I have a Talmud who picked me up in California. He's no longer alive. Avi Zichrona Levracha, and Avi knew someone who was graduating UFP graduate school with a degree, and he knew how to make movies, etc. And lo and behold, I get a million dust. I have someone who yet remembers Malka's grandparents davening in his father's shul, Abe Levovitz, Seichet Zichrono Levracha, and everything falls together. All right, but what people don't realize is that Rakefer is, when he brings something into the world, he's a team player. The minute I found a producer, I withdrew. He's the producer. I'm there to answer his questions. I'm there if he asks me to give him advice. But if you have a man who knows how to make a movie and he's producing it, you got to let him do the job. I'm not a dictator. It may be a compliment to me that I'm not a dictator. Maybe it's to my dad. It's just the opposite. It's a condemnation. A man like you should be a dictator. Okay, you can make your own. You draw your own conclusions. We need dictators and we need democratic people. So there were certain things in the movie that certain people were very angry at. They thought I put it there. So one of the questions was. In the movie, it comes across that mixed classes is a lachatkhila, that this was the Rav's viewpoint. And it's true, the Rav was worried if the girls would be separate, they'd never learn Gemara. And you go, and today, with a girl going to graduate school, she has to be able to have intellectual Judaism. She just cannot be a chassidah. This is the Rav's approach. It's intellect. It's brisk. It's not entirely Chabad. Fine. This book, you're going to love this book, Alex. If there ever, I'm telling you, fabulous, fabulous, fabulous.
And let me borrow it.
I can't lend it to you. I'm reading it now, but I'll show it then. You'll buy it. You got to mark it off. We'll take up a collection for you for the book, okay? The foundation, I'll tell the foundation they have to get you the book. Make it available to all the rabbis. We'll write to Wexner. Remind me. So coming back here, the Rav wanted the girls to learn Gemara. So I said to Tova that people feel the documentary, I said, I don't want to interfere. But is that correct? So we got into a long discussion. I said to Tova, look, not to Tova, to Atara. I said to Atara, look, I'm a Rosh Yeshiva in YU since 62. I can tell you that in the mid-60s, Dr. Belkin was looking for a home for Stern College. It needed larger facilities. There was an old age home, a few blocks, a senior citizens Jewish home, a few blocks from the main campus. And they were willing to give it to Yeshiva University for like $1. And he would have brought Stern College uptown. And in room 103 of Yeshiva University, main academic center, all the Rosh Yeshiva met. And Dr. Belkin was the first one to sign if they bring Stern College uptown, he's resigning. And every Rosh Yeshiva signed on, including a youngster named Ani Rothkoff. Yitzchak, you know who the only Rosh Yeshiva was who wouldn't sign? Reb Yosef Weiss. And you know why? I said, Rebbe, why aren't you signing? The Rav signed, but the Rav Lipschitz signed, the Mashgiach signed, everyone signed. Why aren't you signing? He says, I can't do anything to cause Rabbi Belkin any Achmas Nefesh. I know what that man has done for the yeshiva.
Who Rebbe said was the first one?
The Moreinu Verabenu, the first signature. I wish that document would surface. I can tell you, anyone listening, Rabbi, at the end of the meeting, who should take the document? And the Rav said to Rav Lessen, to the Mashgiach, Yisol das Nemen, you take it. He took it. If anyone knows what happened to Rav Lessen's archives, that document could sell today for $100,000 or more. Now, so I said to Atari, you see the Rav, so she told me, yes, the Rav was opposed on a collegiate level because he felt that men and women at that age can get involved in many problems. We're talking sexual, obviously. And at that level, I said, today, on a high school level, it's no different than what university was 60 years ago. I don't have to tell you what goes on in high schools today, including our high schools, Lo Aleinu. So she said, you're right. Could be today my father would not approve. But, you see, we don't really know the Rav's inner workings. There's no question that he had no choice in 37. And in the book that Natty Helfgott edited on the Rav's letters, you see he has a very interesting letter there on women and what they have to be taught, and he certainly was very open. So the whole question of boys and girls sitting together, singing together, I think you need a lot of good judgment here. And I agree with Alex. Lekarev, boys and girls and Sinai scholars, you're going to get nowhere if you're going to sit them separately. It's hard enough for us to bring them into shul and explain to them Az Yashir Moshe uvenei Yisrael v'teitzimim v'anoshim v'tukmim v'mecholad, that this from time immemorial we sit separately and listen to Rakepet's lectures and why, etc. But Crown Heights, B'nai Torah, fine, they'll sit separately. But that's only the start of the problem with Shlomo Lekarbach. The heart of the problem comes later, and it could be that this is what he's referring to also in Tabud Ra'ah, that Shlomo touched women as he touched men. And here already it's a breakdown of halacha. I don't have to tell you, I taught 31 years, over 10,000 women. What can I tell you? I never, ever would put my hand on a Talmidah. With men, it's a different feeling. Sometimes you're teaching a college kid who's depressed, he's had a hard time. A Rebbe puts his hand on around his shoulder and says, come on, you're going to beat it. Snap up. Don't let it get you down. It's very important. I've gotten shilas like this, the Rav got shilas like this from psychiatrists, from psychologists. If you feel like a teenage girl, you have to put your arm around, you have to show her someone cares for her. Are you allowed to do it? I've always said, I can't be mater. I can't be mater. I can't. You have to. And this is why it's very important today to have women who are learned teaching women and men teaching men. But Shlomo was very free with his hands. Yomo, what's the problem? I'm telling facts.
I know what he said about it. So what about doctors? Why is it mutter for doctors?
Because we hold umen lamore alumnate, that a doctor, when he's doing something, we hope, we have plenty of doctors sitting in jail in Israel for doing things to their female patients. But my wife only likes to go to a female doctor, you should know, and a female dentist.
We're
understand?
About halacha, we're not talking about
I just answered you. Uman lamor alumnate. But you all know that in every office, I was just at the doctor, and Eno's throat specialist earlier today, there's a sign up, you have full rights to have someone accompany you into the room when you see the doctor. If you follow, a woman goes in, she brings her friend with her, her husband with her, etc., etc. Now, but then, In retrospect, it gets worse because women came up with many complaints about Kalbach. You all know there's a website where the women express themselves, and it is a problem. And you can understand why he uses the word Tabut Ra'ah. And he calls them an Adam Rasha, a Min, or an Apikoris.
This is the Rabbanasha Klein's language?
Rabbanasha Klein's language.
So you really, okay.
I'm quoting him. Do me a favor. Not time. Turn on the air conditioning and set it at 22, okay? And okay. Now, and then he quotes the source. I want to give you the source. The source is very powerful. It's an interesting source. Shabbat Ayin Hei Omer Aleph. And the Gemara says, Ayin Hei Omer Aleph, Halom Me Dover Echad Min Hamagush Chayav Mita. I'll give you the Art Scroll translation. Halom Me Dover Echad Min Hamagush. What does it mean? From a heretic. And you look into Rashi, lo meid min hamamshicho laveda zara afilu dva Torah asur lilmod mimenu. That if you are learning and he is an apikores, he is a min, magush, a heretic, call it what you wish, even Divrei Torah, you can't learn from him.
And when tells Yeshiva, the boys would go to the home of Rabbi Agus.
Not tells, near Yisrael.
Near
Yisrael.
And he would kill the class in time.
I'll give you the answer to it in a few. I know who you're talking about. Jacob Agus. What, you don't have to tell me who Jacob Agus was? A Reconstructionist. Somebody, and he was a Talmud Mufak of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik.
And when he taught the Drashi, when he was quoting a pasuk, immediately put on a kippah.
Yeah, and then put it away. Okay. Well, I'll give you the answer in a minute. But let me just follow what he's saying. He says that even Divrei Torah, and then he quotes the Sefer Chassidim, that Nigunim Shemishtamshim Bechem Laveda Zara, you're not allowed to use in davening. And we have to keep away from Nigunim that have a bad connotation. Ulechein. Pashut Asul Lishmoel and Iguna Yadom Rashab Lumod Mimenu Shumdava. Wow. All right. Yitz raised a good question. What about, I'll give an even stronger question. What about in Baltimore when the Israel boys went to Professor Albright of Johns Hopkins?
He was not Jewish.
He was not Jewish. He was a guy. And they went to him to learn.
To learn what?
He was a bucky in Lashon of Chazal. You have no idea who Albright was.
What did he teach? What was his academic?
He was Semitic.
He was a Bible scholar.
He was a very special individual. A Nohev Yisrael, you know, a real wonderful individual.
Was he an archaeologist?
I don't know if he may have dabbled in archaeology. Yeah, it says yes. I only know of him. I never met him. Jacob Agus, I know better from my research. I knew the family. I knew his brothers very well. And then Reb Menashe Klein asks Yitzchak's question. Except Reb Menashe Klein asks us on the basis of Chazal. No. You have a very sharp example. Rebbe Meir, who was his Rebbe? Acher, as a driven leaf. How many of you have read the volume? All right, you know what I'm talking about, Michael.
Milton Steinberg.
Yeah, Milton Steinberg. It's a very fine volume with real emotion.
Brilliant.
And brilliant. Well, he died young. He was a brilliant individual. And this raises Yitzchak's question. So you see what the answer is, Chazal, that he threw away the rims the outer covering and took the good seeds. And of course, So here you get involved already. Reish Mem Vav Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya. Reish Mem Vav. Secular studies. How can you have a yeshiva university? And the Ramah, you all know the famous Ramah, that you're only allowed to indulge in non-Torah studies, Misha Milov Kreso Basav V'Yayin, Shas V'Paiskim. No, is there anyone in this class who can say his stomach is filled with wine and meat? I don't know, I've been learning longer than anyone else in this room. I think I'm the eldest person here, not by that many years, but I'm older than Yitzchak, I'm older than Michael, older than Vic, and I've been learning day and night, and I still wouldn't dare say I'm filled with bus v'yayin. So I have to tell you, the Rav raised this question. If you go into Hilchat Sanhedrin and you trace it back to the Gemara Sanhedrin, you see there's a halacha that in order to be a chaver in Sanhedrin, you have to know Kol HaTorah Kula, you have to know Shivim Lashanot, you have to know all general knowledge. It may come up, the Rav asked the question, who can know all this? Who can know all this? So the Rav said, it's not that you know, it's that you know how to learn, you know how to find the sources, you know where to look, you know the system. Avi, you know the breath of Torah Shebaal Peh. Follow? You know how it works. You know the configuration. Hold on one second. So not everyone is on that level, but Yeshiva University, the Rav never ever wanted a Catholic college. I'm using his words now, Catholic college. He always felt you have to have a real college. Professors have to be free to say what they wish. A student has to be ready for the big world. He's listening to Tapi courses. We hope that he has enough bus of the yayin in him that he'll know where to find the proper answers. You can't say they don't. It's talui. You can't say.
I can say they don't.
No, you can't say.
They don't.
You're talking about yeshiva college now.
Yes, I'm talking about yeshiva college.
Talking in my days, Baruch Hashem, most knew how to find the proper answers. But it's a risk. I agree with you. And Rabbi Meir, I mean, there's a Meir, Abi, come back.
How can you justify that halakhically? It's one thing for a scholar under certain auspices.
Alex, I can't get involved now, but what I suggest
is... that we've trained you well enough in time, that you can go into an environment and have Abi courses and just you'll be able to resist it.
I will advise you to get hold of the Rav, the World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, Volume 2, the section on Yeshiva University. And the two drashot, I don't know, Rakefid did some things in his life, good, bad, but two drashot he translated into English, that is the greatest. The Rav on why he loves Yeshiva University. Go through those two talks given to YURA, and the Rav deals with your very question. But okay, but be it as it may.
Is there an approach that says, and I'm not trying to be heretical, is there an approach that says that not every mandala in the Gemara is to be taken as halacha? In other words,
that not every mandala in the Gemara can't be halacha. We have machlokes tanoim, machlokes amorayim. But everything in the Gemara has to be taken seriously, and Agada has to be understood. And this was the greatness of the Pachad Yitzchak, if you mentioned Rav Hutna before, that he opened up the Agada in the Litvish world. The Pachad Yitzchak, literally, in America, there would be no philosophic thought, no homiletics, no emotion, no philosophy. you have to give the Pachat Yitzchak all the credit.
Litvish Yeshiva is the only religious institutions in the world where they don't learn theology. As my friend who spent many years in Litvish
Yeshiva. Right, but the Rav once a year opened up the world to theology on the Yotzeit Russia, the second half.
And also in all of his Torah philosophical works.
Well, no, the philosophical works are published from the talks he gave to YURA, but in the classroom, not one philosophic talk was ever given in the classroom per se.
No,
that was always Bernard Revel Graduate School. The books were written from notes. The Rav himself only published Ish Halacha and The Lonely Man of Faith. That's the classic work of the Rav.
Vikashta Misham.
Vikashta Misham came out many, many years after it was written.
Yes. And,
and the Halachic Mind, the Rav did not publish. It was found in a drawer.
But he wrote it.
He wrote it. And it was an introduction to what had been a magnum opus that people would be dancing in Red Square today with joy. And Red Square is big. We could
dance. I'm dancing with the books we have.
But anyway, be it as it may, it's a very delicate issue. And he says Reb Meir was on the level that he could study with these people and be Rebbe Meir and appreciate Acher for what Acher was. And I don't have to tell you, Acher is a very interesting figure. You have the Gemara in Chagiga, you have the Yerushalmi, where he comes riding on his horse on Yom Kippur, falling on Shabbos, I think it was. And Rebbe Meir runs after him, learning with him, and he tells, and Acher tells Rebbe Meir, "Ad Kam Tachum Shabbos, turn back." Alex, do you remember that Gemara? That is so poignant. That is so powerful. Acher, what are you concerned with Tachum Shabbos? You're an apikoros. But you see, as big an apikoros as he was, he understood this at Tachum Shabbos. Rebbe Meir, you have to turn back. Very powerful. Very powerful. Following the Holocaust, you had so many people who left Torah, who totally gave it up, who never wanted to be reminded they were Jews again, who raised children without a Brit Mila. They should never have to face Hitler. And you know the problem, if you have a Brit Mila, they know you're Jewish. And the stories are legendary. But if you notice, Ad Kan Tchum Shabbos, when their children and grandchildren came back to Torah, they were proud, they were happy, and many of them were reborn. It's very powerful. Think about that. Ad Kan Tchum Shabbos. All right, so this is the Apikrosim. How can you learn Torah from them? How can you play their tunes, sing their tunes? Avi, what did you want to ask?
I was going to think, like, talking about the wine and meat metaphor. With the rest of you don't need to necessarily fill yourself up with wine and meat.
No, you have to know the method. You're never going to know it all.
You have to sniff a good wine and know what the steak looks like.
You have to know the method. That's the rub. That had a very big impact on me because it's very frustrating when you start learning, the more you learn, you see the less you know. I mean, I can tell you with responsa literature, you could fill this whole building with responsa literature. It's overwhelming. I'll talk about it Tuesday night. But you got to know where to find something. Today, you use the computer, you have the Bar Ilan, you know, you have magic today. But with all the magic in the world, Mindaf Sein Alamdin, you have to know. Okay, I can tell you a cute story. My grandson, who today is in 7th, 8th year medical school, MD, PhD program, Technion. So when I made my first Siyum, I celebrated many places. One was with my grandchildren, and they were very young, and then the big Siyum was here in Gruz, my first Siyum Shas. So the next week, he comes to my house, our house, and he sees him studying Gemara again. He says, "Saba, I thought you just finished Shas. What are you doing reading it again?" So I explained to him that this is ongoing. You scratch the surface. Okay. Now, then he goes further and he asks the following question that, wait a minute, he wasn't always a Rasha, wasn't always an Apikoros? The guy learned in Lakewood. The guy was a Chabadnik min Hashura. Please don't misunderstand me. He breaks with the Rebbe later. But in 51, in 52, 53, he was one of the Rebbe's closest Hasidim. We have pictures of Shlomo sitting right next to the Rebbe, right with maybe the Gabbai, maybe Rabbi Chodkov is between him and the Rebbe. And what about songs and records that he made before he went with Tabit Ra'ah? Okay, so maybe those we can listen, those we can play. So Nu, find me someone in the Gemara. So here, Yochanan Kohen Gadol. We say he was a Kohen Gadol 80 years. And at the end of his life, he became a Tzaduki, a Sadducee, an Apikairis, a conservative Jew. Call him what you wish. And we see that Chazal relate to him that anything he did before the end of his life, we accept. Yochanan Kohen Gadol, he's looked upon with respect. At the end of his life, we see he went off the path. And that's what we always say, Al Tamin Bi'atzmacha Ad Yom Motcha, because people can go off the path. And we have many examples. I'm not going to go into great detail now, but even in the Hasidic world, there was one great Hasidic Rebbe where something happened Friday night, and until today, we don't know for sure what happened. You know what I'm referring to. Late din, the late dayan, the candles were blown out, or the wind knocked them out, the katska. You understand, you know how much has been written on that? And you can have the greatest people in the world. We have people that came out of Europe after World War II or before World War II, Bikiyim and Shas and Paiskim, they went off the path, some more, some less. We don't have to tell you, they're graduates of Lakewood. Who would ever believe that what would happen? David Hartman's a classic example where he be his last book. I told you more than once, you know how the book begins. He was rabbi in Montreal, and a Kohen congregant comes to him. Rabbi, I want to marry a grusha. Will you perform the wedding? Absolutely. Personal happiness more important than halacha. So you can differentiate. I can understand it. Something, let's say, if Hartman or others wrote Chidushei Torah when they were learning in Lakewood, when they were in Chabad, you can accept it. What they wrote later in life when they went off the path, that we cannot accept. Like Rabbi Yochanan Kohen Gadol. But you see, Rabbi Menashe Klein is right that whenever you refer to Shlomo Kalbach and his records, you bring prestige to his memory. And people will no longer differentiate what he wrote before he became an Apikairis and what he wrote afterwards. It's going to bring prestige. People are going to say, if we accept Rabbi Kohen Yochanan and Kohen Gadol, we accept Shlomo Kalbach, they're going to accept everything. And he is inclined to say absolutely no. And he gives the example, the Sugyan Masechet Yuma Talaf Taf Lamed Chet Omid Bet. And what are you with the Mishnah? Some people did good, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. Some people did bad. You look up, you'll see the Mishnah, see the Sugya. Some people did bad. They wouldn't reveal the secrets, how they made the certain objects in the Beis HaMikdash. Shame Rasha'im Yirkav. And he says, Rabbi Menashe Klein, someone who's an Apikoros, you have to say Shem Rishon Yirkav. You don't want to mention, you don't want to give him a covenant. What does it mean, Yirkav? It should rot. It should. He gives a very practical example. You leave a spoon in the mud, it starts to rust. When it rusts, rakivut, how would you say that in English? It's egelhaftig. It's you can't use it anymore. It's What's the word you want to use?
Degrades.
I can't hear.
Degrades,
decomposes. Degraded, something like that. That's what he says with these people. And he says, someone who went off the path, whenever you mention his name, you should say, Shem Rasha'im Yirkav. What does that mean? Rakivut. That you're not going to use it anymore. You're not going to touch it. And it's not that you're cursing the individual. It's Shem Rasha'im Yirkav. His personment, his reputation. Shame. It's very good vart that he's saying. He says, when we talk about goyim who have been bad to the Jews, then we say, yamach shmam, that everything should be wiped out. But here he says, shame rishonim yirkav, that this individual, his reputation, his achievements, we should negate, abrogate. And therefore, he declares, you're not allowed to listen to anything Shlomo Kalbach wrote. And that would mean that this past Friday night, a guy named Aaron Rakefet was a rotten, vicious, malicious, hideous, heinous, ruthless, depraved dissident, say what you wish about him, off the path, because in the shul in which he davened, which his son-in-law, my son-in-law is the president from time immemorial, my kids run the shul. It's a weekend shul in a senior citizen's building, Rehov HaPamach, all week it's senior citizens doing art crafts. Shabbos Yontif Chalamoid, a shul that is always packed to capacity with the most famous people who live in Israel, davening that little shul. And they had a big machlokes. It's a democracy. There was a big machlokes, number one. There were some feminists there, and they wanted a woman should speak on Shabbos morning once a while after davening, and they put it to a vote, because people threatened to leave the shul, and by unanimous vote, they don't allow women to speak after davening.
Pamach,
Chazon Yecheskel. It's on the corner when you walk
to the
it's on the other side. It's closer to the supermarket. Then came a big machlokes. They wanted Kalbach Friday night. And my grandchildren were very opposed. They don't like long davenings. My grandson made a 6 o'clock Simchas Torah minyan every year. It gets bigger this year, over 100 people, 6 o'clock in the morning. And three leinings, 8:15, Shivas Regal was going down my throat as I made Kiddush for the Olam. So Kalbach, they put it to a vote. So they made the compromise in Masechet Brachot. No, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yoshua, what was the compromise? Harayinika ben Shim Shana, 3-1. 3 weeks, no Kalbach, Shabbos Mevarchim Kalbach. And this Friday night was Kalbach. So, before I go further, we're going to come to Reb Moshe, but not yet. Now I want to move sideways. And I want to introduce you to a very interesting individual I picked up through my shirm, Rabbi Chaim Dalfin. Now this Rabbi Chaim Dalfin, who came to see me here maybe a half year ago, a year ago, maybe a year ago already, 2 years ago, he's a Chabadnik who was a Shuluach, who's back in, I believe, Brooklyn. He has a son who has a shtibble in center North Tel Aviv, down near the Ben Yehuda Frischman area. Normal people, not Messianics. No shtick. They grew up in Chabad. They're real Chabad. Walk on feet are solid. Now this Chaim Dalfin, Rabbi Dalfin, but I use a title once when I introduce him, Chaim Dalfin, very insightful. I'm very, very impressed. He makes a living publishing Svarim. So the Sefer I'm going to quote from is The Real Shlomo. It's an entire volume on Shlomo Kalbach. And he has an entire chapter on Reb Shlomo Kalbach and dating women and marriage. I want to add that this is the book that just came out now, and it was inspired to a certain degree by these very classes, the Monday classes. The book reads Rav and Rebbe, Rabbi Chaim Dalfin, preface by someone named Rabbi Aaron Rakefet. And I have to tell you, you will enjoy this immensely. And he's going to be highly criticized by Chabad because he views the Rebbe as a human being, like we view the Rav. There's none of that worship of the Rebbe. With all his love for the Rebbe and respect for the Rebbe and awe for the Rebbe. But he views him like we view the Rav, and he does a very honest effort to understand who they are and also their relationship. I have to say, I'm about a third done. I read it in manuscript, but now it's a finished product. It's fabulous, in my humble opinion. I don't know if it's available, but you have to go to Amazon or Jewish Enrichment Press Info, Strudel, rabbidalfin.com, D-A-L-F-I-N, Info, Strudel, rabbidalfin.com. Very nice, very nice. Okay. Yoma, what do you have to say? You better listen carefully, too. I can't hear.
What flavor
the strudel? Chocolate. I like chocolate. Okay. Yomo, good sense of humor. Kol hakavod. I'm quoting from the chapter on the book on the real Shlomo. By the way, there are two books on Shlomo Kalbach. This is the second one. The first one is by Natan Ophir, who previously was Affenbacher, and he wrote a full volume of like a dissertation on Shlomo Kalbach.
He's an academic.
He happens to have been married to a Talmidah of mine. His siblings were all my students. He was not. He's of American origins, Affenbacher, Rabbi Dr. Natan Ophir Makaf Affenbacher.
Was the book well reviewed by scholars?
It's a nice volume. I don't know. The reviews I haven't followed. It's a nice volume, but Dalfin's book stands on his shoulders. You follow? He incorporates Ophir in this volume. Now, he he's very sympathetic to Shlomo, and he tells the following story. Reb Shlomo Kalbach goes to 770 to receive kosher bracha wine from the Rebbe's Havdalah cup. And you have to understand, in Chassidus, by the way, everyone remain here. We have exactly a minyan. We don't need outside help, but we do have a minyan here. Reb Shlomo, kosher bracha. Let me make a comment as to what's happening. Are you watching the Hasidic world? And I have to say it's affecting the Litvish world. There is no Litvish world left today. The Litvish world is, if it's not 80% Hasidic today, it's a good 70%. So look, when we do, I know the Hasidim here are happy. Fine, you guys are happy, makes me happy. But let me be a Litvak. Let me be a Litvak.
It's getting better.
It's getting better. Let me be a Litvak. So you notice a Litvak, Yontif ends, finished. You make Havdalah, back to the week. When I finish Havdalah, within a few minutes, I'm on the computer to find out if the world is still standing. When the baseball season's on, now I wanted to find out the World Series Friday night. The Yankees now are hibernating. But by Chassidim, 1-0, unbelievable. But by Chassidim, they love Kedusha, they love holiness, they don't want to let go. So if you notice, at all the Rebbeim today, Motzoi, Simchas Torah, they have Havkafet Shnia, they have a Motzoi Yontif Tish, it's a winter blessing Tish, Hanukkah candles, I light Hanukkah candles, I'm Yotze, I'm a good Jew. The Chassidim, it turns in, Mengeitz and Rebbe. So the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was really something. Kosher Bracha, after he made Havdalah, Everyone walked by to get part of the wine, kosher bracha. Erev Yom Kippur, they give out mezainis, right or wrong, in case that it was decreed that you're going to be impoverished this year, so you're going to be yotzei by getting mezainis on there. Well, Erev Yom Kippur, lekach. They used to bring, I mean, what Chabad can do, no one else in the world comes near. They would bring in from the bakery hundreds of trays of honey cake cut up into pieces, and the Rebbe would stand there giving it out to the chassidim, to the children. I mean, it's unbelievable. I wish I were a chassid. He quotes the Rav, by the way, where the Rav cries in 68, and he's, I mean, I quote the Rav too. He quotes the Rav in writing, where the Rav says he wishes he were a chassid. What can I do? I'm a Litvak, but if I have chassidic ur einiklach, I'll be very happy too. So Shlomo went to get a kosher bracha. Havdalah, when he passed the Rebbe asked him, what's happening with you? Are you married? And you see, this becomes a problem. When a person is not married, can he be a role model? Can he be involved for the sake of argument teaching Torah? What kind of Rebbe is it if the Rebbe is not married? And also you have to understand something. We all have hormones. Thank God we're normal people. You know my lectures on Chazal and sex, and I can't redo them now. I spent the whole year. But Vayashim Chazal, Ki Tov, and Tov Ma'od. And the Medrash Rabbah says, Tov is the Yetzer Tov, and Tov Me'od is the Yetzer Hara. So the Medrash Rabbah says, Tov Me'od, Yetzer Hara. And the Medrash says, yes, the Yetzer Hara to get married. If we didn't have that Yetzer Hara, there'd be no world today. I'm quoting the Medrash. Who would get married? Who would have children? Who would build a house?
I was born before.
Yomo, you are not allowed to speak on this topic because you are not married. When
yes,
you marry, I'll talk about that when I talk about Voloshin. Voloyit Boshishu. Do you know what happened in Voloshin in 1851? How come you don't know? Do you know how to ride a horse yet? Remember the lectures? God should spare us. We'll get there. Take about 5 years, but we'll get there. I have material and volition. Fabulous. But you see, the Rebbe asked him, it's abnormal. A guy is 27, 28, 29, 30. He's not married. The Rebbe is pressing him. Now, he brings, you'll see, he interviewed all time Chabatnikim. Shlomo was very close to the Rebbe. And then suddenly, about 54, 55, he stops coming to the Rebbe. And people asked the Rebbe, why? Why had he distanced himself from Shlomo? And these were Chassidim who were yet Chassidim of the sixth Rebbe and could talk to the seventh Rebbe easily. And the Rebbe said, Kol Isha. Now, Kol Isha, this is unbelievable. What do you do with Kol Isha? Shlomo had boys and girls together. The Tabot Tarbut Ra'ah that Rabbi Nasha Klein spoke about. Rabbi Nasha Klein spoke about Tabut Ra'ah. Shimon, I can understand it. He was an Ungarisha, Hungarian. But the Rebbe knew what's going on. He was troubled too. And here I have to tell you, Bnei Akiva, and I owe a great debt to Bnei Akiva. Yitzchak owes a great debt to Bnei Akiva. We grew up in America where there were no halacha, no commitment. We were tremendous battle being fought that there should be some Yiddishkeit in America. And Bnei Akiva was a magnet. People walked, Malcolm, my wife walked miles. I walked a mile and a half. She must have walked 2.5 miles on Shabbos to get to Bnei Akiva, on Yontif, on Shabbos. You wanted to have a little environment, a little Shabbos, a little Yontif, boys and girls. And there was mixed singing. So I have to tell you that in my time, they asked Rabbi Yitzchak Kotner, of course, many of the madrichim and leaders in Bnei Akiva were Chaim Berlinboys. Chaim Berlin was a very dominant force in Bnei Akiva. And Rav Huttner turned away, he didn't answer. It is said that the Lubavitcher Rebbe was asked the same thing by some Bnei Akivanics, because the Rebbe had, you have to understand, he had tremendous influence. The Rebbe began basically almost nothing. What did you have? The sixth Rebbe planted the seeds, but there were no trees yet. The seventh Rebbe came, and it was what he built, and everyone turned to him, including Bnei Akivanics. And they also asked, and they say also that the Lubavitcher Rebbe didn't answer. But you see, with Rav Shlomo already, the Rebbe felt he's not married, it's mixed singing, boys and girls. And then the Rebbe must have heard about his touching women, and that relationship ended. Now, Shlomo finally married in 1972. He married a very nice lady.
How old was he?
32 was quite young, and I thought he was older. But Schlemmler finally married, and when was he born? 1932? When was he born? 72? No, he may. One second. 72? No, he was older than 32. Go online and see when Schlemmler Karbach was born. I think it was before. We'll make the cheshbon very shortly. 32, 72 would make him 40, 39, 38. Let's see when he was born. Am I right? 32 to 72 is 40 years? Yeah, 40 years. Okay. And the Rebbe kept on nudging him, and he didn't marry. So you see, you're caught here in a dichotomy. Very capable, very bright, very lovely, and yet something is lacking. Now, he makes another point that's very, very interesting. Who were the first two shluchim that the Rebbe sent out? And all the people who object to Chabad will always quote to you, yeah, the Rebbe sent out shluchim. You only hear about the success stories. The first two shluchim, he came out. The Rebbe had to disassociate himself entirely. Shlomo Karbach was the least of it. Zalman Shlomi Shechter, and both of them couldn't sustain a marriage.
Born in 1925 and got married in 1972.
So 1925, wow. So how old was he? He was 47. 47. So Natan, you stand corrected, even though you probably know Schlemmler's Nigunim, 47 to get married. Okay, my apologies. If anyone here is not married, I'm not here to give anyone mussa. I'm just discussing facts. So Zalman Shechter, and Shlomo's marriage, you know, ultimately broke up. But Zalman Shechter, first of all, became not just an apikairis, a world unto himself. No longer a universalist, no longer bound by the halacha, and four marriages. Who knows how many affairs he could have had. Now, Dalfin makes an interesting point that both Karlbach and Shechter later speak of universal love, universalism. And you know that Shlomo could touch a Gentile, turn him on, people loved him, Jew, Gentile, Shechter, the same thing. And Dalfin says, psychologically, this was... what's the word they use in psychology when you compensation for the fact that they were not married? It's an interesting point. When you're married, you love your wife. You shower your wife with love. If you don't shower your wife with love, they're going to kick you out. You're going to have marital problems. They're going to complain. Mark, you know what I'm talking about. You got to shower your wife with love. When you don't have a wife, it's an interesting point. Think about it. Now, Karlbach, excuse me.
When he was married.
Well, Yeah, but that was so much later in life that he already was off the path. He already couldn't. It was not a normal relationship. And Zalman went totally off the path. Whatever you want to say about Zalman Schechter, no one's going to claim he's a good Jew. But Shlomo remained the Shomer Shabbos with love and feeling and passion.
He's a charismatic genius.
I understand. The Rebbe sent the two right guys, but they were swept away by what they found. And Schechter, because he was a genius and because he was so self-centered, he totally went off the path.
He went two blocks from
him. So you know what I'm talking about. I can give you a contemporary example. Gafni Winiaz, Shem Rishom Yerkov. You have no idea who this man is and what he's done in his life. Nu, have you ever met him? Guy's a genius. Pick up a tape of his and listen to him.
I always thought he was totally hollow. I heard him speak.
Yeah, you thought hollow? He captivated audiences. He had charisma. I was upset with him.
He has this rock star charisma that a lot of people are attracted to.
Okay, beside that.
No content.
His content was Hasidic. Shas and Paiskim is beyond him. But
Winiaz,
Gafni, Gafni. I've heard, let me not get started. Yeah. Leave it out. But this was Schechter. Schleimer was, he was caught up. This is a Lakewood boy. He knew what halacha was. This is a Kalbach. This is a product of German Orthodoxy. This is not someone who willingly gave it all up. He suffered. Now, getting involved in outreach, here you get involved with all these delicate questions. You want the people to wake up to being Jewish. No, boys and girls together is a given. Kol Isha, how are you going to tell girls not to sing? How are you going to tell them to keep quiet? Kol Isha. No, I'll go even further. Then he gets involved with the hippie climate. You remember Kalbach out of the 70s, could be into the early 80s. Think for one moment. He went around with a medallion around his neck. If you've seen pictures of him, a hippie, the house of love and prayer. Even the title, what do you mean love and prayer? Avat Hashem? Spell it out. But they would say, well, if you pray to God, you have to love God. The population took it, love and prayer, love and prayer. Now, you want to know something, and this is just amazing. How long ago did Shlomo Kalbach live? What are we talking about? There are people sitting in this room who knew him. Do you know we cannot get an exact declaration, an exact fact? Was there a mechitza in his house in love of prayer, or wasn't there a mechitza? Where was it, his house in love of prayer? It was in California, on the coast. All right. Do you know, we have conflicting testimony if he actually had a mechitza. And in his father's shul that he inherited on the west side of New York, what they called the Kalbach shul, there always was a mechitza. That we know. Malka davened there once we're on the west side Shabbos, and there absolutely was a mechitza. But where he got involved with the house of love and prayer on the coast, conflicting testimony. And Dalfin is Melamed Schut in Kalbach that it wasn't the permanent house of prayer. He didn't view it as a shul. He viewed it more as a hostel, as a temporary dwelling place. If I can make an analogy, it's like if you're in a house of mourning, Lo Aleinu, and the men get up to daven, in normal, normative Orthodox homes, you don't have a mechitza. The women just walk to another side of the room. It's a temporary structure. You don't need a mechitza. It's like if they're running a hike of YU alumni and the men and women on the hike, on an expedition or a hike, or they're visiting the Shomron and Chol HaMoed Sukkot, and it's time to daven mincha, so the men go to one side and daven mincha, and if they're women who want to daven, they'll stand on the side of the men or in back of the men, and no one in the world will require mechitza. It's like I saw a few days ago, my grandson became a mak, a mafaked kita. So I was at the fallout ceremony, and it was overwhelming. Over 500-600 new makim, over 10,000 parents, grandparents, friends. They should have used Kolak, Teddy Kolak Stadium for it. And it was at Latrun. And when the ceremony was over, the sun was starting to set. There must have been 50 different minyanim. But no one is going to tell the women, run away, the men, go to a side and daven. So he's melamed schut. But then, beginning on page 171, this is where you really struggle with Shlomo's memory. When Shlomo's passing 20 years ago, a number of women have come forth and accused of inappropriate behavior with them. In Dr. Natano Fear's volume, Rabbi Shlomo Kalbach, Life, Legacy, and Mission, he discusses his interviews with 20 to 25 women who made public accusations about sexual harassment by Shlomo. He reported that none of them described details of Shlomo's abuse, but gave vague statements. And here he goes in, excuse me, 20 years later, there's a website. Now I have to tell you, here it's an open issue. I'll cite some of these women. You see, the tragedy with Shlomo begins, and people who knew the family, and this is what they say. I can't verify it. I didn't know his mother, but I've seen life. I've seen this more than once. And here I want to say something very sharp that anyone listening may have a lot of use out of this now or later in life. When children marry, for parents it is very hard when their children marry, particularly a son. Because parents put so much into the children, they don't want to lose them. And the son, you all know what happens, he becomes his wife's husband. The mother loses her son. This is like reflected in the halacha, Yevamot, that a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law can't testify for each other, chazaka shesonot zu etzu. I'm quoting the Mishnah. It's a subconscious feeling. It's a problem. But I always tell parents, children have to marry who is good for them, not who is good for the parents. You have to be willing to accept. And this is crucial in life. I'll give you an example from YU. Great Rosh Yeshiva in my time, made a shidduch. Girl, eldest child, I believe she was one of the elder children, was a family of 13 children. She was an American girl. As much as the parents never left Europe and didn't want to leave Europe, and Europe was in their consciousness, they lived in the Bronx. She grew up in the Bronx. She went to school. Just an American girl. Made a fabulous shidduch with a big matmid from Brisk, Yerushalayim. Reb Noach Bornstein told me about the shidduch. I called Reb Noach, I feel in the alte Brisk, hat me nicht gesehen as a matmid. Translation, Shimon. Even in the old Brisk, we never saw such a matmid. The marriage lasted 1 year. That girl cried. She hung out around BMT in the early 70s at much older students. She came to Israel a junior in college or after college. And she cried, why didn't my father let me marry a YU guy? You should know, I've often asked about it. She never remarried. And no, no. It was apples and oranges. Now, I can give you many, many more examples. Let it stand. I don't want the microphone to pick it up. There's a Gadol B'Yisrael, no longer alive. He raised a son who Yitz Rubin knew very well. I knew him very, very well. Now, his wife, his kids, nothing is left Yiddishkeit-wise, basically. It's unbelievable who their grandfather was, great-grandfather. And the papers, when his father died, all the papers wrote about the life. And he was going with a girl, a frum girl, but she was a Dat HaMizrach. Father broke off the shidduch. And they say that he married that girl, it would have been a different situation. And this is so important for parents to learn. And it's hard. It's hard for parents because you raise this kid, you put so much into this kid. I don't have to tell you what those of you who are parents, what it means. You don't sleep at night. You get up, you diaper, you worry, you take care, you run to the doctor. Your whole life centers around the next generation. And then the next generation gives you a kick in the back to your way of thinking. And they say that his mother, who valued Shlomo, he was the Elohi, he was the giant, he was the genius. No girl was good enough. Whenever he brought home a girl, not frum enough, not smart enough. And his life developed subsequently. It's not normal anymore. He's in his 30s. He's trying to go out with 17-year-olds. And then he's touching, and I don't know, there is no testimony beyond what I'm describing, and as Dalfin says, quoting Ophir, my eldest daughter, who's had a lot more experience with life than I have, as you all know, she's very famous, she was the first lady since Matan Torah to pass all the exams in Choshen Mishpat and Eben Ezra, and get Chasmachar authorization from the chief rabbinate to be the first rabbinic pleader to enter the rabbinate. She tells me, Abba, you are naive. Okay, I let it stand. Is Dalfin right? Is Rakefet right? Or is Rakefet's daughter right? Now.
I can't tell you that I know people who knew him on the side that would defend that position. They said they knew him well, and they weren't like Hasidim of his at all. I mean, they knew him in the neighborhood.
And they said
that he was someone that had what they would characterize as a kind of excessive chesed or Rachmanis, that he felt that there were a lot of women that needed
right, right. No, I understand. That's what I alluded to.
Absolutely did not. Right.
Right. So here is some of the stories. He quotes a Stern College story, 1960. And you hear the story. It was 1916. She was 17, having graduated from high school and started college attending Stern. One day she noticed someone with a beard standing on the cafeteria steps with another person checking out the girls. I like that expression, checking out the girls. She got her food and sat down at a table and someone joined her. It was the same fellow she had noticed checking out the girls who was now sitting across from her. She asked him what he was doing there and he said that he visited regularly to play music for the students. He continued to engage her in conversation. She did not think much of it initially. She had never heard of Shlomo Carbach because in 1960 he was just becoming famous. Later she learned from her friends that he was the singing rabbi. A few days later he appeared again in the cafeteria at her table, but this time he said things that repulsed her. She told him to leave and he did. I asked her how he knew about her. She said that he had his way of getting information, and she thought that he chose certain girls to approach. The experience left such a bad taste in her mouth that she considered him a womanizer and wanted nothing to do with him. And he goes on and on with what the women have to say. Some women accused him of leading them on. telling him he was interested in them. It might lead to engagement, might lead to marriage, and nothing came out of it. Finally, he married the lady he married. She didn't come from an Orthodox home or a totally Orthodox home. In 1972, Shlomo married Ne'ila, who did not come from a strong Orthodox home. Nevertheless, Ne'ila was a refined and kind person who embraced him and accepted him as he was. She also grew with him and became fully Orthodox. Although they divorced in 1980, they remained good friends until he passed away. It seemed to be a turning point for Shlomo, and he returned to a more formal Orthodox approach that the establishment could understand. So you see, you're hearing the testimony, and you're dealing with a conflicted personality. I hope that Alex is right, that my daughter is wrong, 100%. On page 177, he summarizes Shlomo's life and his relationship to girls. As a teen, he focused on Torah learning and refrained from talking to girls and scolded others who did. But then he describes, as a young adult, he made attempts to establish kosher relationships with Orthodox women. As he approached early middle age with fame in the youth, hippie culture of the time, he was more involved in outreach activities and moved away from halakhic rules about relationships with women, gravitating more towards embracing and hugging women, and later accusations of inappropriate and unwanted sexual approaches to women. And he goes on, he marries, divorces, and then has a more positive attitude. That's Shlomo. I knew him intimately, I would say. I knew him by reputation from Lakewood. I was very close to David Hartman. David and Schlumberle knew each other from Lakewood. I still recall vividly when David's eldest son, who today heads up the institution, Daniel Hartman, the Brit Miller in the North Bronx where David was rabbi. I remember going, I was sitting there, and there was Schlumberle on one side of me, a few people down was David, Duvi Hartman, and Schlumberle entertained, and he looked at Hartman, and they smiled at each other, their eyes met each other. And in retrospect, they were two tortured souls who failed to comprehend what Ol Malchut Shemayim really means. To Hartman's credit, he went off the path in one area where we're trying to be Melamed Skut Kiruv. Hartman is, of course, a different story, but it's an open issue. In 1970 or 71, believe it or not, Shlomo Kalbach rented an apartment in the building next to mine. I live until today, Baruch Hashem, in Rehov Rav Chaim Berlin 18. In 16 Berlin, Kalbach rented an apartment. Saturday night, he held an all-night Malava Malka open to the public. My wife, who loves his nigunim, loves and will always love, wanted to go over. So being a devoted husband and knowing where my next meal is coming from, I accompanied Malka 1 foot away from my house. And Schleimler may have recalled me, may not have recalled me, embraced me. And then he looked at me and was about to embrace Malka, but he saw I gave him a look. He didn't. There was a smell there of, I don't know, with drugs, dope, spices. Maybe it's an all-night Havdalah smell. Let me tell you, we went home very quickly and realized it is not our cup of tea. But the issue is open, and somehow Dolphin says the only people in the world who do not play Karl Bach Snigin is a YU element that refuses to play Karl Bach because of the website of the women and their complaints. Does anyone know what element he's talking about? Who belongs to it? What part of YU? But all I know is in the Haredi world, the Tzioni world, the modern Orthodox world, Karl Bach Nigin are staples of our life. Karl Bach evidently went out. There just was an auction. Karl Bach's personal items auctioned off. Piano rakes, $20,000. I can assure you, if anyone would auction off the piano that I might have played on, it ain't going to bring in $20,000. But Yitzchak, we are not finished with Shlomo and Karl Bach. What does Rav Moshe Feinstein have to say? So if I can summarize, what did we do today? Yes, Rav Menashe Klein, Asid, Shem Rishon, Yerkav, Rakivut, 100%. Okay, Tshuva, Rabbi Meir, Yitzchak's question. He took the peel off and got to the good kernels. And then Dolphin's analysis, where he cites Sophia, it's a very interesting, insightful chapter. What are we trying to do? If I can quote Rakefet in his preface, we are engaged in predicting the past. Halavai, we could go back in time and go to the house of prayer and look and see the mechitza, look and see who's there, look and see Karl Bach's actions. But we're human beings. Time is a factor. We're not the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we can't do it. So we're trying to predict the past. The Shia today was trying to predict the past. To my dear friend Rabbi Rubin, here is Rabbi Weiss, and here is the Rav on Pashat Ha'azinu. One second, I hope I have it right here. And here is the psak that I told you about with Yom Kippur. That's very important. And I found the psak not only in our circles, but in Haredi circles as well, word for word, Rav Malamed. And it's terrific for a rabbi to know with Yom Kippur, with taking medicine, with water with the medicine. Then I have a question. Is there, Yoma, where are you going? We need a minion. Where's he going? Stay in. Oh, Baruch Hashem. Yashakayach Yomo. Gentlemen, does anyone take Professor Erwin Levitz or Yisrael Levitz class? Please give this to Professor Levitz from me. Okay, Avi?
Can I put it in his box?
Put it in his box and write that. I'm sending it to him, sure. Okay? Finally, I have another copy. This is an autobiography of Ambassador Max Campbellman, was once famous, no longer alive. This is a Yeshiva Salanta MTA graduate. Read the book and try to understand the Bronx in which I grew up, and that how I have to make a gor melech hayavim tovot, that I could grow up in the Bronx and come out of it a Torah Jew. And this is an MTA graduate. Finally, if anyone's interested, the American Jewish Yearbook 1999, with a very interesting article on Russian Jewry and what's going on 25, 26 years, 27 years ago. You'll find it very enlightening what was and what is. I wouldn't miss tomorrow's Shia for all the people who attended a Fabrengen in Crown Heights when the Rebbe was in his prime. I'm going to say something tomorrow I don't believe anyone else has called your attention to, on the ingeniousness of the Rebbe and how Chabad it helps Chabad survive and thrive today, and it's something no one has called attention to. Until we meet again tomorrow morning, Be'ezrat Hanotein Le'yov Koach, and at my age, I have to thank the Ribbono Shel Olam that I am among the living and keeping life going. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya. For who Rachum? Who do we have as a chazan? My dear, please.